time for this week's Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt in the house with us, without a hat, to talk about a book that he mentioned a couple of weeks back, Nine Goals. Bruce, tell us about it.
Well, you know, we all have moments in history we remember exactly where we were. Well, I remember where I was on April 5th, 1970, very clearly at the time the game which this book most focuses on took place. I was in my friend Peter Plimpton and his roommate's suite in Schneider Hall at Franklin Marshall College, watching the afternoon hockey game, which was the Red Wings against the Rangers. And April 5th, 1970 is one of the most interesting days in hockey history in the NHL because of both what happened and what didn't happen. Now, we're just a couple of years into the expansion after the original six, and the Western Division is terrible. And the Eastern Division is really good, except for the Toronto Maple Leafs. In fact, first place, the Bruins and the Blackhawks tied for first with 99, and the Rangers and Montreal were tied for a fourth at 92 points. The Oakland Golden Seals got in with 58 in the West. So it was a time when clearly the great imbalance. You had the great Bruins teams. These are the Bruins teams of Orr and Esposito and Hodge and Stanfield and McKenzie. The great Ranger teams of Rattel, Gilbert, Hadfield, Kachuk, Fairburn, and Dave Malone. So these were probably, at the time, far and away, the two best teams in hockey. For 3.5 months of the 69-70 season, the Rangers were walking away with it, and then they got hit with a slew of injuries. So that the last day, whomever scored the most goals at the end of the day, provided their records were the same between the Rangers and Montreal, would win. Would get the fourth place in the playoffs. Now, Montreal considered, after the Rangers won in the afternoon, and we'll go into that game, that's what the nine goals is about. They considered playing the entire game without the goalie because it didn't make any, at this point, they just needed more goals than the Rangers. So they debated it, but they decided that would denigrate the spirit of the game of hockey. This is from a different era. We must also remember, at this time, NHL teams only dressed 18 players. So they had five defensemen as a rule, and they would often not have four full lines of forwards. And they played four games in 5 days. So it was not an NHL of today by any standards. This is also the era before most people were wearing helmets. The Rangers had undoubtedly as much or more talent across the board than anybody in hockey. The Bruins had Bobby Orr, which was not only the great equalizer, but often was what made them better. He's still, to this day, the only defenseman ever to lead the league in scoring, which people sort of forget. And there have been some very good defensemen. In the afternoon, in the matinee game on that day, the Rangers played the Red Wings in the second of a home-and-home. Now, this is the Red Wings of Gordie Howe, Ted Lindsay, Roger Crozier, and a lot of great players. But they had their spot in the playoffs at three was secure. So their coach, Sid Abel, himself a Hall of Fame player, only played the Howe line 6 times during the game. So the Canadians were incensed. They thought that they had laid down. They called him yellow. The Rangers, on the other hand, scored 9 goals. And in that game, scoring 9, Detroit scored 5, but that didn't make any difference to the Rangers. Once they got ahead 7-2, they pulled Eddie Jockeman. They pulled their goalie up by 5 goals in an attempt to score more goals, and he came in and out of the game. What this book does, though, is give a brilliant description of that season and how everything led up to that afternoon. Now, I remember incredibly vividly, there was no television you could get in Pennsylvania that would show the game that night between the Blackhawks and the Canadians. In fact, Montreal couldn't even get it on TV from the Blackhawks feed. There was no feedback at the time. I mean, 1970 seems long way back to my students, but it's not that far back. But there was at a time when the National Hockey League game of the week was, you know, something you watched to see the teams you'd never otherwise see. And unless you lived in a market like New York, you didn't get to see all the home games. And even then, with Marv Albert, Win Elliott was good, they were sometimes on tape delay. So the Rangers win the game 9-2. And when the author Reg Lansbury joins us, we'll go into this. And I think we may be able to get Emil Francis himself, really? Who's in his 90s, on to talk about this. The Ranger players go off. Some of them go to Toots Shores. Some of them go to Il Vagabondo. Some of them go to the Copacabana because they're like, you know, how Montreal's going to score enough goals. You know, they're going to score enough goals. They've got that on the line. Well, they don't. They only score two, and then they pull their goalie. They pull Rogge Vachon with most of the game left to go. And Chicago just feasts on it, winds up winning 10-2. Now, they end up in a flat foot tie with the Bruins, but in the old days, ties were ties. What's also interesting about 1970 is that the Philadelphia Flyers had 29 ties.
Wow.
And that record has not yet been eclipsed. So they're 58. The Oakland Golden Seals went over them with 58 points in the West because they had 22 victories. The Flyers only had 17, and they were tied points-wise for fourth place. So what happens is bad blood will exist after this between Montreal and the Wings for a long time. And historians of New York sports, and I think this is true if you lived in Greater New York at the time, which I did. I lived in Southern Connecticut. Or you are, you know, your whole sports history revolves around them, would say the shot heard around the world, Larson's perfect game, moments from Babe Ruth, this hockey game, those are the games you remember. You know, the Knicks, and at the time, of course, the Knicks are running away with the Eastern Division.
Right.
Apollo 13 is going on at the same moment in time. So the news, the Rangers and the Knicks are below the fold because there are astronauts that might not come home. So it's a really compelling time, and the rivalry between the Bruins and the Rangers will result in the first game of the playoffs in the most penalty minutes ever assessed in an NHL hockey game. So Chicago. So what happens is, the season is winding down, and it's becoming clear that New York and Montreal are really going to be in this dogfight for the last place, for the last playoff place with Detroit. So when Detroit beats New York in Detroit, everybody, Sid Abel says to Emil Francis, "I'm sorry, it's all over. We didn't mean to knock you out of the playoffs." He goes, "We got a game to go." He goes, "You're going to need to score 9 goals." And Francis says to him, "Yeah, well, so I guess we got to score 9 goals," which is what they do. And two of the goals come from a guy named Jack Eggers, who most people will not even remember, who was a rookie, came up because at the time the Rangers had the best farm system by far. They had the best team in Buffalo in the AHL and in the CHL, which was equivalent to the AHL. They had a team in Omaha, and they had lost for protracted parts of the season. Donnie Marshall, Brad Park missed 19 games, the only defenseman to rival Orr of that era, and he'd tell you Orr was better. So they had to get Tim Horton, who was on his last legs at that point in time. They didn't have Jim Nielsen, who was one of their stalwarts forever. They made one of the most heroic runs to the Stanley Cup playoff, and they lost to the Bruins in 6. As Phil Esposito said, the best team never to win the Stanley Cup were the next 3-year New York Rangers. The difference, Boston had a guy who wore number 4, and Bobby Orr could make that much difference in playoffs. And the injuries. The Bruins went through that long stretch pretty much healthy. Now, what's very cool about the book is the introduction is written by Bob Nevin, Hall of Fame hockey player, great with the Rangers, before that had been with Toronto, and he puts a great sense of verisimilitude on it. I got this book in an odd way. My brother met Reg Lansbury at a Rangers game because my niece works for Madison Square Garden and they go to a lot of the games. And he said, "Yeah, I wrote this book." And he said, "Well, my brother does this thing on a radio show." He goes, "Well, you know, it's a self-published book." And, you know, so I said, "Just send it to me. Send it to me. You know, I'll read it." Brian McFarlane, who's a Hockey Hall of Famer, and Bob Nevin and people really, really admire this book because the research is meticulous. You know, a couple of myths. There's a famous way that Sanderson said the Rangers told him in the first game of the playoffs that a price had been put on his head. After he sobered up, Sanderson admitted to tell people, "No, it's not really what happened. I made that up just to try and get the press going." So the research into this is really right there. But it's what's great is you get brought back to 1970. I mean, it references the Apollo thing. It references what's going on in politics. References what's going on in hockey, and you realize that probably the stupidest expansion, when you think about it, of all time was the NHL. You take 6 teams that can't win, you put them in one division. The St. Louis Blues win that division 3 years in a row and don't win a playoff game. They get swept by the Bruins and the Canadiens and the Bruins. At the same time, the Toronto Maple Leafs 71 points was 13 points better than a team that got in. So when they didn't balance the league, when they left the original six together, instead of the original plan to put Chicago and Detroit out west and put Philadelphia and Pittsburgh in the east, that it really meant that for a long period of time, if you won the east, you were the Stanley Cup champions.
Right. Well, and because of this game, I was reading...
They changed the rules.
Yeah, and it was the only time in a 46-year stretch that the Canadians missed the postseason.
Yeah, and they were livid. Yvon Cornoyer referred to the Sid Abel as chicken.
Yeah, said those guys have no pride.
They have no pride. And the other thing is the rules were then changed, so it became head to head. If there was a tie, it was your head to head record. If that was a tie, then it went to your record in your division, and then it went to your best overall record. And then it went to goals, and then it went to goals against. Because what was interesting is, originally they had said it should be the fewest goals you give up, and the Rangers would have cakewalked in because they had given up many fewer goals. Eddie Jackman was, a Vezina, a guy in that era, and certainly Gilles Villemure when he played with them later. Kenny Dryden in his book The Game references this, but I'd forgotten not about the game because I remember watching the game every minute of it with a bunch of diehard Rangers fans, and we ended our day by going to the pay telephone with all the quarters we could muster and sending Emil Francis a telegram wishing him good luck in the playoffs because we were so relieved that we were there. That huge lead they had before everybody got injured, they managed to rally back. One of the finest coaching jobs probably in the history of hockey. But 9 goals, and we'll talk to Reg Lansbury sometime soon.
That sounds great. Thank you, Bruce.
You got it.
SportsLit 101.